All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
What's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Behind the Wheel podcast thing. You know, we do it on Wednesdays, and I'm Scott from Koenig, and with me is the butt of all jokes, Jared.
That's me.
There's your intro. Let's see. Shout out to everybody that came out to FD, New Jersey. It was cool meeting some of you in person and hanging out with you for a few minutes. I know there were some good conversations. Jared told me about them. I don't know if I was there for most of them. But
how about that 10 flying away?
If you did not see this, this is a really good Instagram story. You should check out our feed.
100%
my boy here, he goes to FD. Now, I've set up hundreds of shows over the past 16 years. Jared goes to one show. And when he gets there, yeah, in the first 20 minutes, the tent, Captain Commander over here sends the tent into flight. It orbits around for just a little bit, and then what?
Oh, show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Will it see? This is our boy Jared. I don't know if you can't see it. The tent not only hovered, but then it took off into space where it got stuck 30 feet up in the air on
the main power lines.
On the main power lines.
Well, give him back his phone.
Yeah, please. That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you
15
know.
Minutes. Captain Commander over here sent it up to space.
Listen, it was a great marketing plan. It was there for 3 hours. Everybody was posting about it.
And just like that, the Lord up above sent it back to Earth. Anyhow.
Yeah, let's get on to the podcast.
Yeah, let's do that. So I'm super – before I even put on these headphones, because, you know, that's the one part I don't like. I'm super pumped about this podcast because we started working with Christine. You know what? Let's bring her in. There's no reason.
Okay.
With me is a very cool racer, Christina Lim. Welcome.
Hey guys, thank you so much for taking the time to have me on the podcast. I'm super excited to do this with you guys.
Well, I appreciate that you're thanking us, but we really should be thanking you because
exactly,
you know,
yeah,
we don't bring a lot of value here, so. This really is
for
us.
I can't send a tent up into space and, you know, hang it on a power line for a couple hours. So sounds like
you
got some
need me to send
there.
Him to any one of your events, I'm happy to do it.
We'll have to bring him in for the next one.
Yeah, like if you have anybody that needs to send anything into space, this guy can do it without any preparation. But you know, it's an interesting thing. First off, I feel like your resume is really long and maybe difficult to list. Co-owner of High Speed Motorsports?
I'm the co-owner of the race team, which we started this year.
Yeah.
And I'm super pumped about that. We have a bunch of cars on the team, and two of them are factory race cars from HPD. One is a TCA Civic Si. The other is a TC Type R. I was really excited to get behind the wheel of that last weekend. First time in that car, and it is quick. It is a riot. So I'm really pumped to bring two brand new cars to our shop. We've been predominantly a BMW shop since the start, so this is a little bit of a turn. We just want to have a different offering for our customers and you know, help them be able to take the step to the next level.
Well, the good news is going from BMW to Honda is like a walk in the park. It's when you go the other way that really sucks.
True.
So in addition to that, you're a road race instructor. You're a racer in multiple series, not just one. And you also have a regular day job, don't you?
Yeah.
So the question that I think I have is, when do you sleep?
So that's funny you ask, because I actually really love sleep and I prioritize it over just about everything. So most nights I do get 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Wow.
This means that I am pretty much on and functioning the minute I wake up. I'm doing something before I go to my day job. I'm answering emails, helping clients, coaching customers. And, you know, I took a break to test with you guys for lunch. And after, you know, after work, and, you know, it just doesn't stop. A lot of times I'm headed straight to the track. It doesn't stop. I think a lot of people don't realize that I do all of it. They think I do one piece and that's my full-time job, whether it's full-time instructing, full-time running the race team, or I think most of my friends just assume I don't have a day job anymore. But yeah, I mean, it definitely keeps me busy, but I like to do it all.
Do people think that you have a clone?
Yes. There are friends who live very close by to me, and they're like, well, we haven't seen you actually in your home area for several years now, but every time we see you, you're at a racetrack. So they just kind of assume I'm on the road now.
So now, and you don't have to, what is your professional day job? You don't have to give me the job or where you work, but what do you do for a I hate to say a living. This is stupid. What do you do during the day sometimes?
During the day sometimes. I am a program manager for a software development program. They build something that is very similar to Google Maps for the government.
Oh, okay.
And that is about all I can tell you.
That's fair. Sounds about
she'd
right.
She'd have to kill Jared. Which, you know, hey, what are you going to do? So I want to get into – first off, I want to start with our story. So I had seen you, you know, on social media and different race venues for a few years. And then you had a crash. And it really just became one of those things – wasn't actively trying to pursue you know, looking for some, I wasn't recruiting. I had no ulterior motive, but she had a crash right before, this was right before the runoffs?
Right before runoffs, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like she had to put a whole new car together, like lickety split. So I had just sent a message on Instagram like, hey, like if you need some wheels, let me know. I didn't even know she was working with anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we started to work together a little bit.
Yeah, so that was a really, really crazy year. That was in 2019. And yeah, you know, I've been following you guys for years. You guys actually have a pretty long history with the shop.
Is that right?
Probably about 15, 20 years. You guys sponsored some of the cars to go race in World Challenge. And so a lot of those cars, Hugh Stewart piloted a Volkswagen in World Challenge back in the day, and he had sponsorship from you guys and was running your wheels. And so in 2019, yeah, that was crazy. I got sent into the wall, concrete, not even like a tire barrier. Some dude just pushed me off the track at 100 miles an hour, head on with concrete, and totaled the car. It was just completely obliterated. I got sent to the ER. That was like, it was literally like one of those worst case scenarios. I did escape with minor injuries. I shattered a bunch of bones in my foot, which doesn't sound great either. But you know, nothing major. And I feel very thankful for that. The car was absolutely obliterated. And I just remember like sitting there in the ER, and I had snapped a picture of the car as the ambulance passed the car, and I was like, oh crap. I was like, I basically need all these panels. And I started like texting people. I was like, hey, I need a hood. I need like the whole front end. I need this whole driver's side. And like, I don't think I realized how bad the car was.
Yeah.
Getting sent just straight into the concrete. And you know, it wasn't until the next morning that we took the car to the body shop, and they were like, hey, this thing is toast. Like, you know, we can fix this, but it's not really going to be straight again. We can make it fast, but you might be better off just starting over. And so I was like, all right, cool. No big deal. I was like, I can do this. Found a shell, and I was like, oh, we'll build it for runoffs. And I don't think I even realized at the time what a big feat that was, like, yeah, to just say that. We only had 60 days before runoffs at that point. And most builds to this caliber usually take several months. They're built over the course of a winter. You know, people source stuff for months before finally biting the bullet. And I was just like, oh, okay. I was like, I'll just build a new car for the next race. And there was just so much like outpouring love from the community. They were like, holy crap, Christina, you survived this. Let's help you get back on your feet. Literally, you know, whatever you need, like we're here to support you. You know, messages from sponsors, when you guys messaged me, like that was just like, holy crap. Like, wow. Like, you know, I can really make this happen.
It's crazy because, you know, I don't want people that maybe have never built cars to this extent to understand, but 60 days is nothing. It, in some cases, can take you more than that to order parts for a build of this caliber, let alone putting the whole car together and making it competitive. I mean, crazy.
Well, it just reminds me of SEMA. I think about SEMA when I hear stuff
SEMA,
like that.
Yeah, like, if you've gone to SEMA long enough, you know that you could see a lot of cool cars, and if you open up the hood, there's no accessory belts on things. You can't really fake the funk here.
Yeah,
but, definitely. I mean, there was definitely a lot of work that went into it, and the fact that I knew I wasn't going to be able to test the car before even getting to runoffs was even more pressure. The first time I drove the car was in qualifying one at runoffs at VIR. And that was just like, that to me was actually like, oh crap. I was thinking about it going up the S's, you know, on the outlap. I was like, did I tighten everything down? I was like, yeah. Like, pretty sure I did. I was like, I got to send it because of qualifying, and that's about all you can do.
Yeah. If there's any M fans or BMW fans out there that are watching this, if you want a good dry heave, go watch Christina Lamb's YouTube channel where they actually crush her old shell. That'll do it.
Oh man, you know, I actually just watched that the other day because I was thinking about it, and yeah, that was really sad.
We took that
to the junkyard, and he was like, "Yeah, just go drop it off." Like, he was like, "We don't have space to keep this anymore. You took all the parts off it." He's like, "Just get rid of it, and you can get cash for the scrap." Ugh. And so Frank and I went, and you know, they weighed the truck, and then the guy saw me recording, and he was like, "All right, we'll put on a show for this girl." And he just obliterated. He flipped it in the air and just like pounded it with that hydraulic claw. Ugh. I got $34 for that car.
Oh god.
Yeah, that was the kicker of that video. $34.
That was
almost
painful.
Got you enough gas to make it back to the shop.
Oh man. Good times.
So are you the shop is in Connecticut. Are you still are you in Connecticut, or you're based out of closer to work, right?
So I'm in Virginia, although these days I think I'm probably in Connecticut more than I'm in Connecticut basically every weekend, whether that's to work on cars, to get stuff ready for racing, or just be at the track for clients. We have been out just about every single weekend this year. So it's been really tiring. I finally had a weekend off this past weekend, and I just like laid around. It was the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah.
But I mean, once race season starts, you know what it's like, guys. Like, you guys are at shows all the time. We're at the track all the time. We're supporting stuff. So my phone actually thinks that I live in Connecticut at this time. Like, you know how like your phone like kind of tracks you? It's like, okay, you know, it's only however long to go home. Whenever I leave work sometimes, it's like, oh yeah, it's 6 hours to get home to Connecticut. And I'm like, oh, I don't actually live there.
Yeah, it's got to be one of those. So what do you fly in, or you just drive up for the weekend?
So I will drive up, or more recently I usually take a train. So back in 2019 when I was building that car, I was at work 7 a.m Monday through 5 or 6 p.m Thursday, and I'd work really, really long hours to get everything done. I'd take Friday off. I would leave Thursday evening from Washington, D.C., take the train up. I would still be working on the train. I would get to the shop by close to midnight, work until probably 3 a.m., work all weekend long until Sunday. I would take the 1 a.m. train back to D.C. It was an overnight train. and it would get me back to my desk by 7 a.m. And that's what I did for the 60 days in order to make sure I had enough time to build all of my stuff and also stay employed.
I'm tired.
That makes me extremely nauseous.
It makes you nauseous. It makes me really tired. Like, could I just leave now and take a nap?
And, you know, I like, especially like we're just starting to get back to flying, but a lot of times, like, I'll go to California once a month or whatever it may be. And when I'm out there, like, I'll come to work during the day, work all day, take a night flight to California, you know, get into California, you know, our 2 a.m., you know, work there, and then take a red eye home at night and come right to the office and work a day. And that's exhausting. But I only have to do that here and there. This was 60 days of that. Doesn't really sound fun.
You know, it wasn't bad. We had a lot of good laughs, and we had fun with the build. Of course, we ran into all sorts of issues, but, you know, I think being surrounded by friends during that time was really important. And everyone, like I said, just kind of pitched in and helped, whether it was car parts or some of their time. Or anything they could do, just having people there and having people help during that build just meant the world to me.
We talked about some of the things that you're doing now. Interesting enough, Jared brought this up to me, and we were talking about this morning.
Because I pay attention and I do research.
He doesn't just send stuff to outer space.
No, he doesn't just destroy all our tents in the first 15 minutes of every event. Sometimes he actually does some work. So basically, he was telling me that you got hooked on racing from going through Nürburgring.
That's correct.
So tell me that. I need to know that.
This is an interesting story. Like, I think a lot of people are surprised by this. So I grew up in a very traditional family. They focused a lot on academics, no surprise. And my parents were very, very traditional. They were not into cars. They still don't understand why I'm into cars.
Right.
And, you know, I graduated college and I was like, I want this BMW. And, you know, I got an E90 and it was this cool car. It was really pretty. I knew absolutely nothing about it. And I started to look into doing autocross. And before I did that, I actually went to Germany for a vacation and I was visiting a friend and he was like, I know you just got this nice hot car that you're like super proud of. And he's like, let's go do some car stuff. You're in Germany. So, we did the BMW museum. He was like, you can drive my Touareg on the Autobahn and take it to whatever you want to take it to.
Right.
And then he was like, you know what, let's go do the Nürburgring, because how many times are you in Germany? And people make dedicated trips for this. So I was like, okay, cool. I was like, I don't really know a whole lot about it.
Yeah.
And so we got there. We rented from this company called Rent for Ring. I think they're still around. And it was a Suzuki Swift race car. It was all decked out. It was caged. It had like Toyos on it, seats, harnesses, and everything. And I was like, oh, damn, this is pretty serious. And I was like, oh, I don't know how to drive manual. So I didn't want to admit this to my friend because he was like all hyped. He was like, this is going to be so cool. Like, you're into cars. And I want to be like, oh, by the way, like, I need an automatic car because I don't know how to drive manual. So I whipped out YouTube and I got a crash course. And I was like, I don't understand how this works, but I'm going to memorize the process. And so I memorized the process. I didn't understand why we needed to do all this. I memorized the process of the clutch and the shifting. I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me. But I was like, I got the process down. And I was like, let's go do this. I did not stall the car, believe it or not. Drove it over from the parking lot to the gate. I did kind of have a moment at the gate where you scan your RFID tag and they open the gate for you to go onto the track. I had a moment where I couldn't really get rolling and I just kind of like revved the car a bunch and the guy looked at me. But no, I didn't stall. So that was like my number one goal at the Nürburgring. I would like to go back and drive it properly now that I do know how to drive.
Yeah.
But that was my first experience on track. So my first ever track was the Nürburgring.
Hold on.
I feel like those thug glasses need to come flying in over her face right now because that's amazing.
You don't, this is like blowing, I'm having trouble. So you don't know how to drive stick. You YouTube driving manual on your phone. And then you get in the car and go on to Nürburgring.
That's how it happened.
This can't, like, I mean, I know it's true. This can't be true. Like, people, that doesn't happen. Like, So, all right, so you get out there. How was it on track? You're on track. Like, once you're moving, you feel good. I mean, there's a lot of downshift. Well, maybe not in a Swift, but there's a lot of downshifting that has to happen there.
Yeah, so I had an instructor. They were like, do you want to pay extra for an instructor? And I was like, yeah. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Does he know how to drive stick?
Definitely. He was so not impressed about the fact that I didn't know how to drive. He had this whole condescending speech for me before we even got in the car. He was like, look, I know you Americans, you guys just have automatic cars. You guys don't know how to drive. He was like, look, this is super dangerous. People die here every year. He's like, you don't want to show off to me. And I was like, buddy, I don't know how to drive a stick.
Yeah.
Like, you're the one who's going to be scared here.
Yeah.
But, you know, he walked me through, like, turning in Apex track out. And I was like, all right, I'll just listen to you and you'll keep us alive.
Right.
And towards the end of it, he was kind of grooving with it. He was like, wait, I'm kind of impressed. And I feel bad that I gave you this whole speech beforehand. But, yeah, we had a ton of fun. We actually went around again. And then I got a hot lap. So I got, like, an actual at-speed lap afterwards to see what, you know, I could have done. I had a blast.
As a car guy.
She saved
that
part for
last. Was there a volcano erupting in the background? I feel like we need more drama.
She saved that part for last. Jesus Christ.
She goes, and there was a pound of ice all over the track. Like, so,
but it's definitely one of those things, like, if, like, you just don't know enough that you should be scared. You're just like, oh, okay, whatever. Now that I know all of that, like, I would be concerned if someone were, hey, let's go pound out some laps at the Nürburgring in some car we've never, like, tested. And I'd be like, okay, let's back it down a little bit and, you know, let's chill before we go.
Let's just use the Lido parking lot. Right? Like, that's where we need to be. I think that's incredible. I mean, it's such a good story. So then you come back. You come back from Germany. Tell me the process. Like, how long does it take before you're, like, having a life reevaluation?
Oh, it did not take long at all. I took my E90 to do autocross, and I was like, okay, this is what I can afford right now. It's, like, $35 a Saturday morning. And I did that for like a year. And then I was like, okay, I need a little bit more. Like, that was a good gateway drug, but I need a little bit more. And then I was like, let me get real. Signed up for an HPD at Summit Point, cause that's what's close to me. Mm-hmm. And, I kind of kicked ass at, in my, you know, my beginner group. And I was like, okay, that was fun. I was like, I would do one of those once a year, just as a bucket list. And the next year, I think I did 5 or 6 track days. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's cool. But then I was like, I would never go, like, time trial or compete. I said, those people are totally nuts, you know, with dedicated track cars. And so a month later, I had a dedicated track car. And because I was like, I can't bring this E90, which is my daily driver, out to the track. I was like, someday something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I bought an old E36. It was automatic. It was from this very nice family who owned it for, you know, 12 or 15 years. And the dad was going to sell it back to the dealership and trade it in and get his daughter something new. And he was going to $3,500 for it at the time. And then I told him what I wanted to do with it. I was like, I want to take your car. And I said, I want to build it into a race car. And he's like, if you're going to do that, you can have it for $3,000.
Nice.
I was like, okay. Like, deal. Let me go to the bank. And then it just kind of spiraled out of control very, very quickly. I became an instructor. I started to compete in time trial. I eventually became the time trial director in NASA Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. I did direct time trial in NASA Northeast for several years.
You hanging out with Chris Cabetto?
Yeah, all the time. And then, you know, I was like, oh, racing is like really nuts. You know, I'd watch the races and it just looked chaotic. I was like, I would never do that. And so the next year I decided to go racing.
Right. Seems to be the thing. As soon as you tell yourself,
I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, now you're you full on in. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I sent the car to High Speed Motorsports, and I was like, okay, let's do this. I said, I want to go compete. This is the car I have. I want the best car on grid. I said, I want to show up there and have the best equipment. I want, you know, I just want to have to work on myself next year. So I sent the car to High Speed Motorsports. I got back a GTS2 weapon. That thing legit went from, you know, a nice family sedan to the ultimate BMW race car. I love that thing. And so I competed in GTS2 my rookie year. The full season, I was on the podium every single race with NASA Northeast. We took the car down to Sebring for NASA Champs, and I was on the podium there my rookie year. And that just kind of spiraled out of control. I got an E46, and, you know, I'll never say I won't do anything ever again, because I know, like, I just feel like this whole thing has taught me, you know what, if it's out there, I'll probably go do it.
So, but was, when you sent this car to High Speed, was this the automatic car that you bought, or we have already changed cars at this point?
So it was. I had actually had the car 5-speed swapped already at that point. So okay. I actually learned how to properly heel toe and drive manual on track. By that point, I was time trialing it. And so at that point, it was like a cage kind of street legal car. I had like a guy to do my safety inspection so it would pass. But I kept it tagged and everything, because it was easy to drive back and forth to the track. And once it went full race car, then it was truck, trailer, the whole shebang.
Yeah, that sucks. It's such a small but large step to be able to kind of get that part of the program in.
Oh yeah, huge commitment level.
Yeah. So did you know Hugh prior to sending your car to High Speed, or was that just the place that everybody was talking about?
So there's a ton of shops in NASA Northeast, and to be honest, I pay a lot of attention to like the grid and finishing positions when it comes to their racers. There were a bunch of shops I could have picked from, and you know, they all put out really nice cars. Consistently, I noticed that High Speed cars were finishing on the top of the podium. He was racing with NASA Northeast at the time, and he won every single race he competed in. Nicest guy in the paddock. And so to me, it was just a no-brainer when it came time to build my car. Hugh was just a wealth of knowledge and the only choice.
Man, it's got to be completely, I don't want to say full circle, but such a big jump to go from somebody who's paying somebody to build a car for them to somebody who's now essentially in a good aspect, a partner, right? Like, you guys really have gone the gauntlet in the relationship.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I had Hugh coaching me a ton the first year, and I joke with him. I sent him through hell that first year, you know, coaching me through my rookie year. But yeah, I mean, we have definitely come full circle, and it's been crazy. Like, I never would have expected 4 years ago, my rookie year of racing, that, hey, I would be co-owner of the race team now and helping with a lot of aspects of that.
It's crazy. It's such a big jump to make in 4 years. Like, that's a lot of progression to make in 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
So wild, man.
So, what are the plans for this year? What are we doing this year? Give me the whole rundown, because there's a kind of weird time. We're coming out of the whole COVID thing. Things are opened up. We're ready to go racing again. What's the plan for you racing this year?
Racing this year, I have a ton of racing. I've done a ton of racing. So, as you guys know, we added two cars to our fleet, the TCA Civic Si and the TC Type R. Both of these are HPD factory race cars. And so, in addition to racing, we're supporting customers in these cars. We had it rented out for a customer for comp school. He didn't, his car wasn't quite ready yet. There was a lot of back order on his parts due to COVID. And so he was still like, hey, you know, I still want to race. And I was like, cool, we can support you. Let's put you in a factory race car. Let's get you on grid. Let's get you licensed. That way, once your car is ready to go, you know, you're ready to hit the ground running. I am also racing the TCA Civic, both in NASA and in SCCA majors. I'm racing my BMW in SCCA majors. And we plan on bringing four of our cars, so two of the BMWs and two of the Hondas. to runoffs, we'll be bringing both of the Civics to NASA championships in Daytona as well.
You know, just when you think it's impressive enough,
yeah,
she just starts saying more very impressive casually things. Too. Yeah, like, oh, you know, we're just bringing six cars.
So,
no big deal.
Now, you're not going to pilot all six of those, right?
So I'll be driving my BMW and also the Civic Si. He will be driving his BMW and the Civic Type R.
Got it. Okay. And the other two are spares or?
We're running the Hondas both in SECA and NASA, and then just the BMWs in SECA.
It's a big transition to go from a Honda to a BMW as far as platform-wise and driving. I mean, I'm sure that you've been able to have proper seat time in all the cars, and you've been able to adjust them to your driving preference, but they're still pretty different platforms.
They're definitely, it's a very different drive style to drive them both very fast. And I think it's almost backwards. I think it's easier to come from front wheel drive and move to rear wheel drive. I think like it's a more natural progression. Whereas I think it's harder to go from rear wheel drive to front wheel drive. It doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense to me at first. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I actually spun one of the Civics the first time I drove it, cause I tried to drive it the way I drive the BMW. You definitely have to, I feel like you have to finesse the Civic a little bit more going into the corner, and then you just, you know, you trust it. You have to trust it, give it 100% on the way out, whereas it's literally the other way around when it comes to the BMW.
Well, one, you're pushing yourself out of a turn. The other one, you're pulling yourself out of a turn. It's like, it's just, you know, it is different. It's completely different, but I get that. Like a front-wheel drive car, and, you know, it's totally different. It's like, then you almost, if you ever get yourself into an all-wheel drive car, you almost feel like you're cheating to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's just point and shoot at that point.
So you're going to run World Challenge this year?
I would like to, yes.
Yeah, it's a big commitment with a big price tag.
It is. That's definitely one of the goals, one of the dreams. We have two cars that can go there, and so once we find funding, I would like to have both me and Hugh bring those high-speed Civics to the grid.
Man, it's crazy. Have you had any other thoughts of other motorsports that you would like to try?
Oh my gosh, yes. Literally anything with wheels, I will go do that. There's a dirt fish rally school that I really want to go do. That looks like a ton of fun. I have friends who have done it and posted pictures. Have you guys gone?
No. I haven't, but I've heard all about it. Personally, I know Dave from Rally Ready in Texas. That's like the other school, but same thing.
Yeah, I think that I would love to do that. I'm just afraid that I would push too hard. Anyhow,
I think it looks like an absolute riot. That is definitely on the list. Even local rallycross, I would totally go try that. A hill climb is on my list of things I would like to do.
Okay.
In my BMW, and I don't know, maybe even in one of the Civics. I think it would be fun in either car, just to, you know, go try some crazy setup. And I've got a friend who did it in his LS E36 for several years, and it just looks like an absolute riot, just totally crazy. And you know, maybe go do Pikes Peak one day.
Well, yeah, Pikes
Peak
is
the limit.
Pikes Peak's crazy. I think the thing that scares me the most about Pikes Peak is the fact that once you get up to a certain level, you can't breathe anymore.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
You have to have, your own oxygen system in the car. So, tell me, what do these race cars look like, modification-wise? What kind of power are we making? What kind of things have we done to the car? I'm not talking about suspension, cage. We know all that stuff, but you know, meat and potatoes, power-wise, where are we at?
Yeah, so the TCA Civic Si is sitting around 200 horsepower. It's a pretty stock tune. It's got a restrictor plate in it due to SECA rules. and I think it weighed in at around 3,100 pounds. We did have some ballast in it to comply with ST5 rules at Watkins Glen. It's a pretty cool car. It fits really well into ST5 or into STU with SCCA. It's very much a street car with a cage in it. So if you have driven like just a street SI, it's very, very similar. The Type R is very cool. We put that on the dyno. It came to us with 1 mile on the odometer 2 weeks ago. And so we put on the dyno to break it in before we took it racing. And it does 300, 300 to the wheels. We didn't change a tune. That's just what it came with. We can change it. It can be tuned up to 340 to the wheels, which is a pretty good amount. And it went across scales at around 3,000 pounds. There's weight we can take out of it depending on the class we want to run. But I think we have to ballast up a little bit for World Challenge and for SCCA. So that's about where it sits.
Have you guys had any issue with the overheating of the car or anything like that yet?
No. So HPD goes through the car and they've done a lot of development, a lot of testing. And so we haven't had any of the typical Type R issues when it comes to overheating on track. I see a lot of guys in HPD and they come over to look at the car and they're like, oh, you know, my car's overheating. Like, what do you guys have? And it's got an upgraded radiator, intercooler, everything we need just so that it can stay strong. Guys are taking these things out to do endurance racing. So these things will chug all day long.
I wonder if they did any head redesign. I know that was a lot of the whole issue that they had was the internal jacketing on the head, especially like with the way the turbo feeds off of that head. It was like they just couldn't get enough heat out of the engine, you know?
Yeah, I think they did. I think it was just added cooling that really helped the car.
Which is good because that means it gives hope to everybody else that has Type R's that are overheating.
Oh, definitely.
Man, that's crazy. So do you have any other platforms that you think or you would like to race in the next few years?
I would like to get into a Porsche Cup car.
I knew it.
Who doesn't?
Yeah,
I know.
And, you know, within the Honda HPD family, probably an NSX eventually one day. I think cool. Those things are just so cool. And again, you know, who wouldn't want to drive one of them?
Yeah, that's probably fair. Pretty awesome. Yeah. I've never driven in one.
Neither have I.
Have you gotten in one yet?
Like a street car.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They look cool. I mean, they also look to me like very complicated arms, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Man, I saw the regenerative braking on that thing and it gave me the heaves. I didn't know what to do with it. So, I don't know. So, do you have anything else? Because I don't want to end and you're like, oh, I wanted to talk about this stuff.
No, I mean, the only other real note that I had was like, when I was doing my research, you know, I realized like, okay, you're the high speed, you know, co-owner, racer, instructor, like, what's next?
What's next? That's a good question. Probably focusing more on growing the Honda side of the business. And, you know, if I need to take a step back from driving as much, that's fine. I'd like to grow that aspect and add maybe a couple more cars to that fleet. That's probably my big goal in the next couple of years is to grow that side of the business.
Yeah. That's crazy. It's like there's so many good platforms that have started to come back around. And it's interesting to see people pick and choose what platforms they want. I mean, it's interesting that you go. I mean, I obviously know the affiliation with Honda, but it's interesting to go polar opposite, you know, BMW. It's not another Euro platform. It's like Honda, just separate.
Yeah, well, he's got a lot of history with front-wheel drive. Right. He was actually in one of the factory Dodge programs in World Challenge back in the day, and he also raced the Jetta in World Challenge. So he's been a wealth of knowledge when it comes to these cars, and he's been really pleased with the development that that front-wheel drive has had in the past couple of years. He was kind of dreading some of the aspects of it, but he said, you know, they did a really nice job with the cars, and they handle beautifully.
That's awesome. Make sure before we get off this thing, tell everybody where they can find you. I mean, I want the Instagram. Let's give them the shop email. I mean the shop website. I want it all. Let's give it all.
All right. So the website is High Speed Motorsports, H-I Speed Motorsports. Instagram, YouTube, it's all there. The email is info@highspeedmotorsports.com. My website is Christina Lamb Racing. And I think on all of my social, I am Christina Y. Lamb.
Hmm. That makes sense.
Easy enough.
I got to tell you, like, I've heard in this industry, it's rare to hear so much positive about certain people. And, you know, we have a lot of mutual friends, whether it be Chris or, you know, even like the other day, I was speaking to David Wallens from Grassroots, and he's, nobody has anything but the nicest things to say about you. And that's so incredible, because for a lot of people coming into racing, it's super intimidating, you know?
Oh, totally.
And to be able to link up with either an instructor or message somebody or try to look for somebody that, you know, you can follow, that you know is going to have no ulterior motive other than just the fact that they enjoy that you have the same passion they do. So
yeah, that's I agree. I think it's hard to find people like that, and when you do, stick with them. They're your family. And, you know, I'll say when I started in the sport, there were so many people who helped me get where I am today. I would not be here without those friends, those family. And, you know, just it was the little things. It was when I first started, people held my hand. They were like, hey, here, you know, here, this is what you want to do. This is how I can help you. And, you know, it's nice to now be in a spot where I can return that same favor and help new people coming in, or help, you know, have someone shave 5 seconds off their lap time. We did that at Jersey the other weekend, and it was like a ton of fun to just like see people's faces like light up, because racing is supposed to be fun, right? Like, we're here for the joy of it. We're all here because we love it. And if you're not having fun, you got to reevaluate who you have around you and why you're doing it. Hugh always says to me before every race, have fun, and that's what I always keep in the back of my head, and that's what we aim to do every weekend.
No, that's absolutely amazing. I don't think we could have ended with a better line, right?
No, not at all. I think
that's
awesome.
Great. I appreciate you taking your lunch hour to do a podcast.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Let's see. I want to see if there's any comments here. Let's just see.
Yeah, I was looking through them real quick.
Yeah. I mean, Joshua Collins agreeing with, you know, kind of the fact that, like, just jumping in the deep end. I don't know. He's just saying, I get what you mean. Suffering from a mental condition. I mean, these are all positive comments. I know they sound negative, but.
Well, because you're not reading the whole thing.
So John Peters said, I just jumped in and this may have been covered, but what are the specs for the hypergrams on the E46M3? John, it wasn't covered. They're 18, 10 and a half, 25 offset. That's it.
Yeah, that's actually, like, I get DMs on the wheels like all the time.
Crazy.
People absolutely love the wheels on the car. I think they look so hot. Like I said, I think I just bought half the stock that came in in the black. So
that's right.
I actually
black.
Bent one.
New finish.
Yeah, there you go. I actually bent one at a race like 2 weeks ago. I got into somebody's door and I bent the outer lip. So I've got a set of black ones coming for my car. But yeah, I love the wheels. We've beat them to hell in the past two seasons, and they're all straight. They're lightweight, they're affordable. And actually, one of my favorite parts about them is that they sit just a smidge wider than all the other brands' 10 and a halves. So even though they measure 10 and a half wide, when we put our Hoosiers on there, they sit like real nice and fat. And, you know, we take every little advantage we can get. And I think that definitely helps our cause.
No, it's cool. Like, you know, I know that we're kind of the other way, like where we get our jollies, you know, we don't necessarily get at the track as much, you know, to actually race. But, you know, because so many of us are car enthusiasts, where we get our jollies, the fact that we get to like really develop product that we would want to use and hope other people want to use. And that really is a big part of of what's going on. Joshua, it's not you, man. It's me. I can't read. Like, your joke was good in context. I screwed the whole context up. Like, you can't
that's
own
I
that.
Said,
I have
I
to
said
own
you
that.
Didn't read the whole thing.
I know. I was trying to summarize, and it just didn't go well. I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, getting all upset. Joshua, it's not you. It's me.
Let me read the comments next.
No, listen. I don't want to because it takes you start in with grammatical changes. I don't need that crap. Listen, we will let you go. I appreciate the fact that you took the time to do this. I'm hopeful that we can either maybe get up to Connecticut in one of your Amtrak runs and try to link up with you, maybe do something like we'll make you do a garage tour with Hugh.
Ooh,
actually,
I like that.
We're going up to FCP Euro in not too long. We'll get with you outside of this and see if you're gonna also be up there that same time.
We are like 3 miles away from FCP Euro, so hey. You better come visit us.
Yeah.
There we go.
So if you're going to be up there that weekend, I think we're going in a few weeks. But we'll link up with you afterwards, and we'll see if it all comes around. You know,
yeah.
Get some lunch. We'll tour a shop. Sounds good.
There you go.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thanks so
again.
Much. Tell Hugh we said hello. And I don't know. We'll see you really soon.
Yeah.
Awesome. So hang on for a second and let's get rid of this thing. We're going to get rid of it. All right. So that's it. I'm going to take these headphones off because it absolutely drives me nuts.
Myself.
I know. It's driving
me nuts.
I can't
hear myself anymore.
I can't stand that. It's the worst part of doing a podcast over the thing. Anyhow, let's see. New piece of content coming out on Friday. We do this every Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. I love the people that are still sending us messages. What time is the podcast? It's like the same time for the past 2 years. Also, we go live on Instagram and Facebook just before this, 2 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday. You come through. You can ask questions. We'll answer most of them. I mean, there's some things that genuinely I don't know, but if it's about sending tents into space, this guy's got you covered.
I'm the
expert.
He
can tell you all the aerodynamics involved in sending a 10x10 canopy up into the stratosphere. Aside from that, listen, make sure you're subscribed. If you're listening to this, get subscribed because we've done a giveaway just recently. We gave it away over the weekend. And if you were not subscribed, you clearly missed out. So that's it. That's what we have. We will catch you back here next week. Take care of yourself. Have a good week. Don't hurt anybody. Don't hurt yourself. We'll see you later. Take care.